Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. This is Valerie Ann, and I'm filling in for Austin Thomas this evening. He may be calling in. So when he gives a call in, I'll bring him in. I'm not sure if Riker's coming on. I work today. One of my other jobs. So I didn't get a chance to really call anybody to see if they were coming on with me. So I'm just going to play the Unraveling the Matrix intro, and I'll be back with you in a moment.
There's something wrong. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind. You have to see it for yourself. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. Like a splinter in your mind. Tumbling down the rabbit hole. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Like a splinter. Splinter in your mind. All I'm offering is the truth.
Okay, everyone, I'm back. I worked today, so I didn't really prepare for the show as much as I wanted to. But I wanted to bring up an article I received today, and it's titled "A Man Made a Shocking Discovery About ISIS in America," and showed a photo of this man dressed in, you know, Muslim clothing in Texas. This was in Texas, and it appears what appears to be on the back of his Muslim clothing. On the upper right-hand shoulder is the ISIS symbol, you know, when you look at the photo. And I wanted to read to you, I don't know why this is happening, but, you know, anytime somebody posts anything about ISIS or anything about, you know, the Muslim community or the jihadists, why don't you say the Islamic jihads, anything that's posted on Facebook, some people are getting it taken down. I'm wondering why that's happening. So this gentleman basically took a photo of this. He was in a store, and he took a photo of this guy with this ISIS emblem on the upper right-hand side of his, you know, Muslim attire. And basically it was in a deli in Houston, Texas. He said he spotted the guy in front of him wearing full Islamic attire with what happens to be an ISIS emblem on the front and back. He's been removed for supposedly depicting graphic violence. So he questioned, how can that be graphic violence? He only posted this man with this, you know, Islamic attire with the ISIS emblem on his right-hand side of his shoulder. So he said something about having a Facebook page tactical advantage was flagged because of the photo. And it says he also was flagged for posting a photo of his family, which violates social media sites' nudity. He doesn't even understand why his Facebook was flagged when there was no nude pictures anywhere of anybody in his family. So he doesn't know why he's getting targeted, according to this article, by Facebook. And then it basically states, the individual who owns the Facebook page, his name is Mike, they didn't give his full name. He has since republished the photos of the apparel of the ISIS follower supporter that he spotted in Houston, and he posted the main one. So if you want to Google it, photo, it's at Western Journalism. So if you go to westernjournalism.com, it's just a photo of a man. The title is "A Man Making a Shocking Discovery About ISIS in America." So you may want to look that up. Wow, my phones are ringing off the hook tonight, aren't they? So also what I wanted to bring up is this is what's interesting. Let me bring up some of my research I did yesterday, and it was basically about, I don't know, what I wanted to also, there's so much I wanted to discuss, and I'm going off on a tangent here, but the thing is there's so much going on now around us. And somebody like me who does this research and there's so much to read on and research on, it's like everything's taken me into different directions. And it's not because I can't stay on one topic. I'm researching one issue. It brings me to a whole another issue that I have to look into. So, you know, for those of you who do conduct research, you know basically that how that happens. So basically, let me bring up my research I did. Here we go. Okay. So what was reported, and even by USA Today, which is part of mainstream media, it was reported on September 4th, it was only a couple of days ago, that there were reports of missing Libyan planes raised 9/11 terror fears. And I'm not here to spread any, you know, terror propaganda, anything like that. I'm just reading from a report that USA Today stated, and other even alternative media webs are also basically reporting this. So I'm going to read a little bit from the article, and I want to read you something else that's kind of disturbing. So September 4th, there's a report of missing planes, Libyan planes, okay? It raises, you know, concerns about 9/11. It says reports that 11 commercial jetliners are missing from main airport in Libya's capital, Tripoli, are raising fears that militants can use them in terror attacks to mark the 13th anniversary of 9/11 next week. It states the Washington Free Beacon, a conservative news website, cited anonymous sources who said intelligence agencies have warned the jets could be used in attacks in North Africa and elsewhere on September 11th. The date also marked the second anniversary of the Libyan terrorist attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi that killed four Americans, including Ambassador Christopher Stevens. State Department spokesman Marie Harp said, "We have nothing to confirm these reports about missing airlines." So it's around the intelligence, you know, area that, or community rather, among the intelligence community, that there are these planes missing, okay, from Libya. And if you remember around this time, or even maybe about less than a week ago, there were, they believe it was militants that were at the compound jumping in the pool, jumping off the roof, going into the pool. There was one video showing one of the guys doing that. They were basically just partying and everything and took over the compound. So I don't know if those are the individuals, but there was also a report last week that, if I can find it here, that there one of the militant groups in Libya, I got to get their name, one of the militant groups in Libya basically took over the airport in Tripoli. So that's pretty interesting that it comes out that 11 airliners, Libyan airliners, are missing. And so, like I said, it does raise concerns, of course. So that's definitely, definitely concerning, I believe. I understand sometimes, you know, the mainstream media wants to just throw fear out there so the American people become fearful again and we all accept the state and the surveillance and the NSA. Well, it's for the sake of security. I understand that. I'm not for that either. But I truly believe that ISIS is a real threat, regardless of who created ISIS, and we can go on to say who even created ISIS. We can go on to discuss that, same individuals who created Al-Qaeda. So the thing is, what we need to stop doing is training Islamic militant groups, because it's only going to come back and bite us in the you-know-what in the future. I don't know why we haven't learned that yet, but every time we train some Islamic militant group, or, you know, what Obama wants to say is a freedom fighters, they're freedom fighters. So, you know, since they're fighting for freedom, you know, the American people will accept arming them and supporting them. So we still haven't learned that when we do that and we provide arms and financial support, any kind of support to these militant groups, it always comes back and bites us in the you know what. So the thing is, I don't know when the U.S. government is going to learn that there is, when you have an individual that is in an Islamic jihadist state of mind, there's no negotiating, number one. There's no seeing it their way. There's no way that you can logically communicate with them. All they care, if they, even if you want to help them fight the Assad regime, which that's another situation we can get into, but if you want to help them, they're not in the same, they have a totally different culture. They don't think like westernized people. So it's like you're creating a monster when you give them these arms. I mean, it goes with our police departments. When you arm our police departments, you know, where they look like the U.S. Army or the U.S. Marines, and they have tanks and they have grenade launchers, it's the same thing. They're going to want to use it. You know, they're going to want to play with it. So they want to use this stuff. So it's the same. I'm definitely not going to compare, you know, I mean, Islamic jihadists against our police department, but the psychology is, when you give that kind of weaponry support, then they feel like they're big enough now that they can use it. So, you know, I'm just giving an analogy. But the thing is, the same thing with the Islamic jihadists. You support them. Now they have that kind of U.S. military equipment. Now they think they're above all, and they can take over countries and cities, just like what ISIS is doing. I don't understand why we keep arming these so-called freedom fighters when they're not freedom fighters. So, President Obama, you need to stop calling them freedom fighters, because they're not fighting for freedom. They don't know anything about a democracy, neither do you. But they don't know anything about a democracy, any kind of freedom, especially for women or for Christians or for somebody who's non-Muslim. So we need to stop arming these people that are not westernized at all. So I also wanted to bring up, so about the Libyan missing planes, what happened was President Reagan issued an act not to allow Libyan nationals to train at U.S. To, you know, attend flight school in the United States. And what I find what I find extremely disturbing is this. April 3rd, this is on, it's called, it was the Libya hearing, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and it was a testimony of Alan D. Burson, who is the Assistant Secretary for International Affairs and Chief Diplomatic Officer, Office of International Affairs, U.S. Department of Homeland Security. So on April 3rd, there was a hearing, and I'm reading from this hearing. I'm going to read it. It's pretty long, but, well, it's not really that long. It's just a few pages, but about 8 pages, but it's extremely important because I don't think a lot of people know this is even out there. Okay, so, again, if you want to look it up, you can go to judiciary.house.gov and look this up. It's called Libya Hearing, April 3rd, 2014. So I'm going to read, again, from the transcript. The background of this, I'm going to read from this, states, in 2010, the Department of State, DOS, formally requested that DHS rescind 8C.F.R. Section 21450 to allow for aviation and nuclear-related bilateral security cooperation with the Libyan government. In 2012, the Department of State and the Department of Defense signed a joint letter reiterating the formal request that DHS take action to rescind that Section 214.5. The Department of Energy additionally contacted DHS to request the rescission of the same act, the same Section 21450. Among other things, among other things, these departments pointed out that the rescission of that Section 21450 would enable the DOD as well as U.S. private sector companies to provide aircraft and training essential for successful security and counterterrorism operations with Libya. Again, I just stated that you cannot have any kind of, I just don't understand, you can't have any kind of agreements with these countries that you just can't. No matter how much you try to instill democracy and Western civilization on these people, you cannot do that. They're not in that mindset. They don't believe in that kind of lifestyle. And we continue to do this. Why do we need to have private sector companies and the U.S. government involved in providing aircraft and training to implement a successful security and counterterrorism operations with Libya? I don't get it. Look what happens when we do that. I mean, think about it. Going to Saddam, we took out the – I say we when I say the United States. The United States took out Saddam Hussein, what was it, 2003, 2004, I'm losing track. If Saddam Hussein was still the president of Iraq, regardless of the type of person he was, we're told and we all know that he wasn't such a great man. But would this be happening in Iraq now with ISIS? ISIS would never have been able to take over if Saddam Hussein was there. I mean, the same thing with Libya. Gaddafi was taken out again at the hands of the U.S. government. And the militants took over Libya. I just don't get it. And then now we're helping the Syrian rebels or the freedom fighters get Assad. We stepped away from that. Now there's other things we're being involved in, like letting Libyan nationals attend flight schools in the United States and providing them with training. Huh. Okay. So that was April 2014, this year. I'm going to go on. But keep in mind what I just read to you about Libyan. There's 11 planes, Libyan planes missing, 11, according to that report. And that was just a couple of days ago. So they have this hearing in April. Okay, and now these Libyan planes are missing. Okay, that was great that, you know, the Obama administration wants to train Libyan nationals to fly planes. Great. Okay, so let me go on. Section 214.5 applies only to Libyan nationals or other aliens acting on behalf of a Libyan entity. If that's not broad, I don't know what that is. So this section applies only to Libyan nationals or other aliens acting on behalf of Libyan entity. Other aliens acting on behalf of a Libyan entity. So they don't have to be Libyan. They could be anybody as long as they're supporting, a Libyan entity. There are currently no other nationals of specific countries, including those of countries designated as state sponsors of terrorism, banned from seeking studies or training in aviation maintenance or flight operations in the United States. Okay, here we go. I'm going to read it again. This is, again, during the hearing. Currently, no other nationals of specific countries, including those of countries designated as state sponsors of terrorism, banned from seeking studies or training in aviation maintenance or flight operations in the United States. In the absence of this 8 CFR section 214.5, Libyan visa applicants see an admission to the United States for any purpose to include aviation and nuclear-related training would be subject to all of the visa security measures currently in place to protect U.S. borders from terrorist-related or other illicit travel. All right, so we need to first question, what are our visa security measures? Because I don't understand people just coming through the borders. Apparently, Southwest problem, as long as you have a baby that needs a diaper change, they can come through the United States border. So I don't know what they're really talking about there. So I'm going to go on. The U.S.-Libya bilateral relationship has changed considerably since that Section 214.5, which, again, was during the Reagan administration. Gaddafi's policy reversal of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism led to the lifting of international sanctions against Libya in 2003 and 2004. Okay, I'm going to reread that, okay? Think about what I just said. They took out Gaddafi, right? They, meaning the U.S. government. I don't say we anymore because I'm not part of that. Muammar Gaddafi. Gaddafi's policy reversals on weapons of mass destruction and terrorism led to the lifting of internal sanctions against Libya in 2003 and 2004, and the Secretary of State rescinded Libya's designation as a state sponsor of terrorism in 2006. So why did we assist in taking Gaddafi out in 2011? Keep that in mind. The United States is working to establish robust diplomatic, military, and economic ties with Libya. Despite Libya's challenges in building and stabilizing democratic institutions, Libya continues to seek a strong relationship with the United States, the United Nations, and other international partners. A key element of Libya's success in its transition will be its ability to meet national security requirements. Again, we're looking to stabilize Libya, or when the discussion is looking to stabilize these countries who are not Western countries, but we're still getting involved in trying to Westernize them and making them democratic states. It's not our business to do that. In February 2013, then Secretary Napolitano agreed with Department of State, Department of Energy, and DOD to begin the process to amend DHS regulations relating to Libya. This consisted of beginning the regulatory process to amend the Provision 8 CFR Section 214.5. The draft regulation is currently under review pursuant to Executive Orders 12866 and 13563 at the Office of Management and Budget, Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, and will not be issued before this review is completed. Okay, I'm going to get to the security in the visa application process. Okay, so that's part of this hearing. That's what they're now discussing. So it basically states, notwithstanding the new relationship with the Libyan government and our shared security goals as described by the DOD and DOS and DHS, I'm sorry, everybody knows the alphabet agencies, but just in case you don't, DOD is Department of Defense, and DOS is Department of State, and DHS, Department of Homeland Security, considered numerous mitigating security measures when considering amending 8 CFR Section 214.5. And I'm going to get to that section in a little while, but I do want to read this to you, but keep in mind what I'm reading now when I go to that. The U.S. government continually improves and expands its procedures from vetting immigrants, refugees, and visa applicants, and today our vetting process considers a far broader range of information than it did not have in the past few years. Other procedures continue to check applicants' records of individuals known to be security threats, including the terrorist watch list, as well as law enforcement, other intelligence community holdings. You see, this part right here is where it's flawed, because there are reports, obviously, we all know that ISIS is recruiting in the Western world. They're recruiting from the UK. They're recruiting, you know, it's mostly from the UK and the United States when I'm talking about Westernized societies. So they're recruiting from the UK and United States. You may have individuals in the United States that have not committed any crimes. So their fingerprints are not going to basically show they've been involved with any kind of security threats, terrorism, or any criminal activity. But there are people that are still being recruited into ISIS, and they're traveling to, I don't want to misquote what I've heard, but I think they're traveling basically to the UK and then going from the UK to Syria. I think that's what I was hearing when they're coming from the US. They're reporting about 100 as they know. As of today, they know of 100 with ISIS in Syria. So the thing is, there may be people, again, that have not committed any crime, that have not been, you know, part of a terrorist watch list or been deemed a security threat. So that's where, again, this is what. So they're going to look to see if this person basically, you know, to get a visa has any security threats. Not everybody has been caught yet. Okay, so that's one of the things they're going to do. They're going to check their names and fingerprints against any records. Okay, then it says these checks are vital to advancing the U.S. government's twin goal of protecting the world's most vulnerable persons while ensuring U.S. national security and public safety. Okay, so they want to ensure U.S. national security and public safety. Well, if you want to ensure that, President Obama, why don't we close the borders, okay, and stop letting people through without the process that we've had, okay? Interagency stakeholders to include DHS, DOS, and DOD, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Terrorist Screening Center, the National Counterterrorism Center, and the other intelligence community partners have constructed a visa vetting process that leverages state-of-the-art technology, information sharing, highly skilled and trained officers, and interagency cooperation to facilitate legitimate travel and trade without compromising our nation's security. If Libyan nationals were permitted to enter the United States for the purpose of aviation or nuclear-related education or training, big mistake, they would first register with the DHS Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is ICE, Student and Exchange Visa Program, and a part of the visa application process. Under the SEVP, which is a Student and Exchange Visitor Program, a prospective student's information is entered into the Student and Exchange Visitor Information Systems upon acceptance into an education or screening program in the United States and is available to consular and fraud prevention officers when making a visa determination. Should a visa be issued for study or training in the United States, the Student and Exchange Visa Program database is continually updated to monitor student progress. Where Libyan nationals are currently a 12-month single-entry visa, so they can come in for a year, and then they have to, reissue that after 12 months. A visa applicant would next complete the online DS-160, which is another form for non-immigration, visa application, so they have to fill that out. So after the visa applicant would next complete a form and submit that. This automated form provides consular and fraud prevention officers the opportunity to analyze data in advance of the visa interview, enhancing their ability to make decisions with more information than was available several years ago. The automated application form is smart, and they stated that in quotes, meaning that certain answers to questions will trigger subsequent questions that elicit additional information from the foreign national. You think these people are stupid? You think these people are really going to be stupid and answer a form in a certain manner where they know they're going to be questioned on it? Come on. The system will not accept applications if the security-related questions have not been answered fully and irregular answers are flagged to ensure that consular officers address them in the interview. Okay. The Enhanced Border Security and Visa Entry Reform Act of 2002 mandated the use of biometrics in the issuance of most U.S. This requires that U.S. embassies and consulates abroad must issue to international visitors only machine-readable, tamper-resistant visas and other travel and entry documents that use biometric identifiers during the vetting process. Before the Department of State issues a visa, the visa applicant's fingerprints, are screened against two key databases. The first database is the DHS Automated Biometric Identification System, which is also called IDENT, I-D-E-N-T, which screens against a database of available fingerprints of known and suspected terrorists, wanted persons, and immigration law violators. Oh, that's great. So they have in here immigration law violators. We have about 26,000 that came in a couple of months ago, right? Aren't they all immigration law violators? But again, that's another issue that we could discuss. IDENT currently contains approximately 160 million identities, more than 10,000 matches of visa applicants. Records on the IDENT watch list are returned to post every month. The second database is the FBI's Integrated Automated Fingerprint Identification System, which contains more than history records. Visa applicants' fingerprints are also screened against a DOD-provided data set in IDENT containing fingerprints for threats identified during military operations. Okay. So, interesting. So we have all this technology that's going to screen these Libyan nationals that maybe have been off the grid. They haven't done anything and now want to, you know, they decide last week, hey, I want to join the Islamic Jihadist ISIS or some other terrorist organization. And they're clean. They're clean. They haven't done anything illegal. They're not on any terrorist watch list. Again, it's the mindset of these individuals that we just can't change. I'm not saying all Muslims. I'm saying these individuals that were trying to make democratic states. And think about it. We have some nerve basically wanting to make other countries just democratic and free. Yeah, we are free to a certain point compared to other countries like the Middle Eastern countries. I understand that. But in comparison to them, yes. But the thing is, we're talking about an administration that also they want to create democratic societies in Middle Eastern countries that don't want to be westernized. Why don't we worry about what's going on here in the United States? Why don't we worry about and our Congress and our Senate worry about this president and his executive orders and his violation of the Constitution since this administration started? Why don't we worry about working on our freedoms here that are being taken away? This is what we need. And they're having meetings and hearings on how to allow Libyan nationals into the United States to allow them to attend flight schools, aviation schools, and to give them nuclear training. I don't understand this. But in 2011, we take out Gaddafi. President Reagan signed this act, basically, that states the U.S. is not to provide this to Libyan nationals. Now, this administration wants to rescind that act, which was the hearing back in April 2010. I don't know how many or if any got in and obtained this training in the United States. But now, according to reports, there are 11 planes missing and Libyan planes missing just a couple of days ago. So how do you lift a ban on this? But then now these planes are missing a few months later. I don't understand what is going on with this administration. I don't know where Obama's head is at. I just don't get it. He's not a commander-in-chief. He has no clue how to secure our nation. With him, there's no such thing as borders. I mean, he was basically saying in court saying, oh, you know, we don't live by our borders, but our bonds. Yeah, okay. When he was talking to Mexican president. Yeah, Mexican president wants all his people to come over here. There'll be less crime there, but more crime here. It's also reported by border agents that don't come out and say who they are, but they know that there are people from questionable countries that are coming through these borders. This administration is still not doing anything about it. They're still letting people through. And I love, you know, no offense to the liberals. Well, no, I'm going to offend the liberals. Don't you understand that your support of this administration is killing this country? Yeah, I'm going to attack the liberals. You know, the liberals see that, you know, Obama wants to share everybody's wealth. I guess the liberals don't understand. We live in America, which is a society we're not supposed to be living in a socialist or a complete socialist society. I understand. We do have some socialist programs. We have, you know, we have welfare. We have food stamps. Socialism. And Obamacare is complete socialism. Obamacare is another topic that I can go off on for 3 hours. So the thing is, we have all this going on. ISIS issues with Russia and Ukraine. Oh, and there's another thing. Obama needs not messing with Putin because I just don't get how he continues to do this. You know, the sanctions really did a good job. Obama, good job. The sanctions really, 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 you know, caused Putin to back off of, you know, Ukraine. Yeah, the sanctions worked so good that Russia basically started the BRICS Bank, which is Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Started a bank. They're not part of the whole New World Order. They're starting their own New World Order, okay? Part of the IMF. They're not part of the Rockefellers. Not part of the Rothschilds. They don't even want anything to do with that. They start their own bank, the BRICS Bank. And a lot of good, though, sanctions did Obama. Good job. So I'm going to go back because, again, if everybody knows me, I go off on a tangent in the middle of talking about something. I go off on a tangent about something else. I don't know. I guess that's what makes this show interesting. So let me go on. So basically it states, so now there's this whole visa program that these individuals are going to have to go through, you know, that these individual Libyan nationals, oh, and other nationals, you know, alien nationals with interests in assisting Libya. Okay, so it's not just Libyan nationals, anybody. Anybody who's part of making Libya better, basically, can get in on this visa. So they go through a screening process. So let's, recap what I read. Through a screening process where they check their fingerprints for any individuals who are security threats, terrorists, who are on the watch list, anybody questionable. Okay. Then they have a form that they complete online, which anybody complete a form and online. So I don't know what this form is. I never went to go do this form. There's no reason for me to. But I will check into the form anyway just for, you know, educational purposes. So then they have to add, you know, go online and fill out a form. And they have to be interviewed. Okay. Then it goes on to say in this hearing transcript, DHS checks all visa applicants against the automated, you know, the automated system. Which contains 27 million records of persons found ineligible for visas or against whom potentially derogatory information exists, called CLASS, C-L-A-S-S, employs strong, sophisticated name searching information and ensures matches between names of visa applicants and any derogatory information contained program. So they're also now, you know, I want to know, this is my question. They have to go through the visa process, but it sounds like, I mean, this process can take, I mean, if they have millions of people want to come through, what, even just say, let's give a conservative amount of, you know, 15, 20,000 people from Libya or any other, what they deem here, an alien entity that wants to, you know, learn on behalf of assisting Libya. Okay. Just say they want to come to these schools here. So there's this visa application process. This will take forever. They have to screen through a system. Then they have to fill out another form. Then they have to be interviewed. Then they have to be processed through another system. And then a secondary screening. There's a secondary screening. Okay, I get it. They have all these this screening process, itinerary visas. So I want to know, there's this big whole screening process for these individuals that want to attend flight school. But what about the screening process for a temporary visa? They're not discussing that in here. They're talking about a 12-month visa. Because there's no way they're going to take several thousand people and be able to have the screening process that's going to take forever to be able to attend flight schools here. It's going to take way too long. So I'm wondering if they're not talking about, and I don't see it, for temporary visas. Because it's such thing. You get a full visa, but you get a temporary fill out a form. You get a temporary visa. Somebody sponsors you. You can get, I mean, we have freaking ISIS here. We have Islamberg. Anybody have Islamberg? Islamberg is a Muslim community. They're basically jihadists, and they live in upstate New York. They have an area. They have a sign, Islamberg. Look it up. Sponsor, oh, and it's run by the Muslims of America. Okay. So who's going to host these? Who's going to basically sponsor these individuals for a possible temporary visa? Muslims of America, who the FBI, who is basically, I'm sorry, the FBI was basically investigating the Muslim America for terrorist acts. And then the Obama administration and the Department of Homeland Security do not even deem them a terrorist organization. Look it up, Muslims of America, Islamberg. So, yeah, basically they're going to be letting, lifting Reagan's ban on training Libyan nationals in flight training school. So in conclusion, the hearing basically, the individual hearing said in conclusion, in formulating my the policy recommended to the Secretary Napolitano, to then Secretary Napolitano, so basically before she had took off, she knows what's going, she got smart, she took off, she resigned. As you all know, what was it, like 8 months ago, something over the last summer? Maybe it was a year ago. I don't even know. Time goes so fast. So basically, they proposed this during her, you know, while she was Secretary of DHS. So basically it states that over the past 31 years and since the implementation, okay, of Section 214.5, the U.S. government has constructed a visa vetting process that leverages state-of-the-art technology. So basically, we're going to lift the ban because we have the state-of-the-art technology that will catch all terrorists trying to come into our country, which are probably already here. So they don't need to get a visa because our borders are open. So they're probably just already here. All you have to do, you know, according to the Obama administration, they don't turn any child back to Mexico. Okay, I get it. You have a little baby coming in. I get it. But then you have other individuals. A child is considered under the 18 years of age, correct? So you can have a 14 or 15-year-old little gang member coming in that works at the drug cartels in Mexico, and they can come through the border with no problem because they're children. So they're children, and they're coming through. But who's also sneaking through? And border agents have reported, and I don't have any names. Names are irrelevant, to tell you the truth, when it comes to this information, that also other alien immigrants are coming through these borders. And it's not just from Mexico. So from Middle Eastern countries. And they're sneaking right through. So, you know, they're constructing and implementing this, you know, new visa vetting program with state-of-the-art technology. So that's supposed to make me change my mind. Because, oh, we have this technology now we spend trillions and trillions of dollars on that, you know, may not catch an individual because, you know, or it may. Hey, it may. You know, let me give it the benefit of the doubt. I'm sure it'll catch someone if they go through the process. You know what I mean? They may get a temporary visa where they have a little bit of a background check to, you know, be able to come in and attend flight school. Then all of a sudden take off, never see them again, and they're, you know, part of hiding 11 planes in Libya that nobody knows where they are. Interesting. So what I do want to read from is the actual Reagan's Act, Section 214.5, if I can locate it here. If anybody's interested in calling in, because I'm really sick of talking to myself, I'm joking. The call number is 347-855-8301. Again, 347-855-8301, in case you're interested in calling. So now I'm going to bring up this act, if it ever comes up. Here we go. I have all these windows open and tabs. I don't really write everything down. I really didn't have a chance to write anything down. Okay. So the 8 CFR 214.5 Act is Libyan and third country nationals acting on behalf of Libyan entities. Let me get the actual – it's not even coming up. I wanted to get the actual PDF up. Hold on. Oh, wait, I think I may find it. Pretty long. So I just want to get the parts that I already read. That's important. Yeah, so basically, President Reagan, see, the thing is, the information I have here shows all the different amendments to it. Now, I want the original. I want the original. While I'm looking for that, I want to get back to the reported planes missing. Okay, so I read to you that now, you know, to recap, I read you that we're now the Obama administration is looking to lift the ban on Libyan nationals or any other aliens from such countries that are assisting Libya to attend flight school. So now he wants to lift this ban, but I want to get you the exact date of that article. September 4th, 2014 was the date this article came out where they basically, you know, these 11 planes are missing. But if these 11 planes are missing, where did they go? That's why I know, where are they hiding these planes if 11 of them are missing? So I want to go back to the article. The article also states that Images have surfaced online showing militants posing with the jetliners, taken when the militants overran Tripoli's airport last month in a fierce battle that left much of the airport and its aircraft damaged. In the past 4 months, a renegade general has battled Islamic militants in the eastern city of Benghazi, cradle of the 2011 uprising and toppled Muammar Gaddafi. As powerful regional militias have fought for control of Tripoli Airport, Islamic allied militias have seized virtually all of the capital. There's a Moroccan military expert that stated credible intelligence, that provided that there was credible intelligence that one Libyan militia is plotting to use the planes in attacks on the region on the 9/11 anniversary. But I don't know what region they're talking about. Maybe their region over in the Middle East. They didn't state here. The Huffington Post reported, citing Al Jazeera Television also, so this individual was interviewed. His name is Abdurrahim Makawi. An aviation secretary expert said the planes, if actually seized by terrorists, pose more of a threat to countries near Libya than to the U.S. homeland. A stolen aircraft from Libya would unlikely penetrate post-9/11 U.S. air defense and security measures, but they could pose a threat to targets that are much closer, said Jeffrey Prince, author of Practical Aviation Security and professor at Metropolitan State University in Denver. Airliners are required to file flight plans before entering U.S. airspace, and air traffic monitors would be looking for the aircraft matching the description of any stolen planes, Price said. An airliner could try to fly between radars to avoid detection, flying threats, he said. Price said most countries near Libya, including in Europe, do not have the same air defense capabilities and would be more at risk. The reports of the missing planes, which first surfaced in mid-August, likely sparked an international search for the planes by intelligence agencies. The latest report surfaced after an Islamist militia seized a U.S. embassy residence only last weekend, posting a video online of men playing in a pool at the compound. In late July, U.S. diplomats evacuated the compound to Tunisia under a U.S. military escort as fighting between rival militias intensified and thousands fled. About 150,000 people have fled Libya during the fighting, and another 100,000 have been internally displaced, according to United Nations report released Thursday. Yeah, so when there was this video that's going around. It says militia said it has secured U.S. compound in Libya. You can also get that from USA Today. I'm just reading from USA Today. So now, basically last month, this Islamic militia reportedly seized the U.S. embassy residence in Tripoli in Libya. Although U.S. officials cautioned that they had been unable to confirm the takeover, but later they confirmed, because this was back on August 31st. The U.S. ambassador to Libya, Deborah Jones, acknowledged on Twitter Sunday that an online video of a building overrun by crowds of people appears to be a residential annex of the U.S. mission. They call it a U.S. mission. They give it a pretty name. No, basically, it's a U.S. Mission for colonialism of another country where we have no business being. But she added that that wasn't in the article. That was me. But she added that she could not perform this. She cannot perform this, to my knowledge. Per recent photos, the U.S. Embassy Tripoli Chancery and compound is now being safeguarded and has not been ransacked, which was a complete lie, because basically it was. The video posted shows unarmed men playing in a pool at the compound, jumping into it from a second-story building. Voices heard in the video identified it as the U.S. Embassy compound. An Associated Press journalist reported walking through the two-story structure Sunday, its windows broken after an umbrella group of Islamic militias, Dawn of Libya, invited onlookers inside. The Dawn of Libya, and we want to send them to flight schools in the United States. The journalist reported seeing treadmills, food, television, and computers still inside. So they didn't steal anything. That was a joke, sorry. The alleged seizures, occurs a month after American personnel were evacuated because of growing violence in Libya. I mean, Libya is unstable, but we want to lift a ban, and I just don't get this administration. Where is their head at? I just don't get it. We're going to have to go to break soon, so just so you know, studio again. But it's not coming up. Okay, here it is. So I have to go to break, and I'm going to go to break, and I'll be back probably in about 3 to 4 minutes.
You're listening to Guerrilla Radio with Austin Thomas and Liberty Lisa. Join second hour by calling 1-347-855-8301. You're listening to The Sunny Thomas Show with Sunny Thomas. Join the second hour by calling 1-347-855-8...
Hi, friends. When it comes to reaching your audience, the best approach is in person. If you have a band, business, or charity event, you want to reach people in the best ways and venues possible. If you're touring in the Midwest, you need DMI Promotions. Their friendly staff is ready, willing, and able to assist you in venue locations and event promotions to make your show or event successful. Contact Tori Webb at 515-865-4463 or toriwebbdmi@gmail.com. DMI Promotions, your Midwest promotional team and proud sponsor of Truth Emerges Radio.
You're listening to Unraveling the Matrix with Austin Thomas. Join the second hour by calling 1-347-855-8301.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Breaking the Oath Breakers on NWO Truth Radio. My name is Ted Jotty. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Paul Rogers. Are you with us, Paul?
I'm right with you, Ted. How you doing today, brother?
Ultimately interlinked with the most nefarious psychopaths on the planet.
I was a part of it. I've seen it firsthand, and that's why I got the hell out of the military. I'm a very staunch constitutionalist, and I believe that the founding document and the original intent is what was what made us great to begin with.
Breaking the Oath Breakers, Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on NWO Truth Radio.
What if you worked for the government and the government didn't work for you? What if freedom were a myth? What if we don't live in a free country? What do we do about it?
Another day just like any other. Out of the blue, it turned to horror.
And we as the Congress have the ability, the authority to undo regulations. For too long we have allowed our regulatory bodies to write law and we do nothing about it.
How could they? They will pay when the ego cries.
Because it isn't the guilty that suffer, so often it's the innocent who suffer.
When the ego cries.
For the Enterprise with Joe Miller, Sundays and Wednesdays, 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Central, 7 p.m. Eastern, only on Worldwide Resistance Radio.
Aid is all worthless. It doesn't do any good for most of the people. You take money from poor people in this country and you end up giving it to rich people in poor countries. and they're used as weapons of war, so you accomplish nothing. We should export some, maybe some principles about free markets and sound money, and maybe they could produce some of their own wealth. But this whole idea of talking about the endless wars and the endless foreign aid, it seems like nobody cares about the budget. I mean, we're in big trouble, and nobody wants to cut anything. So if you're going to keep sending foreign aid overseas and these endless wars that you don't have to declare and go into Libya without even consulting with the Congress, the biggest threat to our national security is our financial condition.
You talk about war with the government, and everybody's, no, we can't do that. That would be wrong. I don't know about anybody else out there, but I've never picked any candidate. Nobody that I've ever said, hey, let's get this guy up and put him in office. No, never happened. They always give us and say, here's your selection. And then we got to vote on whoever they give us. And whoever they are is being picked for us by some establishment of people that we don't even know. I speak in general. I always have, always will. I don't know why I do that, but I do. When I speak, I just flat out speak in general.
Catch a ride with the Dashboard Outlaw. Sunday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Only on Truth Emergers Radio.
Have you heard?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Breaking the Oath Breakers on NWO Truth Radio. My name is Ted Jotty. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Paul Rogers. Are you with us, Paul?
I'm right with you, Ted. How you doing today, brother?
Ultimately interlinked with the most nefarious psychopaths on the planet.
I was a part of it. I've seen it firsthand, and that's why I got the hell out of the military. I'm a very staunch constitutionalist, and I believe that the founding document and the original intent is what made us great to begin with.
Breaking the Oath Breakers, Wednesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on NWO Truth Radio.
Congressman Paul, you voted against the war. Why are all your fellow Republicans up here wrong?
We talk about a humble foreign policy, no nation building, don't police the world. That is a conservative, it's a Republican, it's a pro-American, it follows the Founding Fathers, and besides, it follows the Constitution.
A wonderful, wonderful night to discuss an amazing document, and I'm looking forward to getting back to it. Seems like every week something new and amazing pops out at us.
Yes, they want to claim that their way is decent society. Uh-huh. Their way is not decent society. Their way is control, subjugation, and slavery.
Constitution of the United States.
Oh yeah, it's daytime for the Constitution. Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on NWO Truth Radio.
Hello, this is Grandpa W.S. Stone, the spokesperson and withering corpse for the Last Voice for Liberty Network. You know, I'm here to talk to you about senility. Senility is... Thank you very much. You know, I've been very disturbed lately because my dear wife Eleanor's not with me anymore. Yes, that's right. She's with Jesus. Or Jesus. I don't know how the son of a gun pronounced his name. Some Cuban guy from Miami stole my woman, and I'm just not going to take it anymore.
You're listening to Unraveling the Matrix with Austin Thomas. Join the second hour by calling 1-347-855-8301.
Hello, everyone. Okay, this is Valerie Ann, filling in for Austin Thomas for Unraveling the Matrix, so I'm here. I brought in the famous Austin Thomas.
How are you doing, Valerie?
I was doing good. I was getting lonely. I was talking to myself for an hour.
I'm sorry. I had so much going on,
okay.
and I heard you, and I said, "Oh man, I gotta call my compatriot here on Unraveling the Matrix."
Of course. That's hilarious. No, I knew you were busy today. I knew you weren't feeling well. How are you feeling? Better?
I'm feeling a little bit better. Calling in, hanging out.
Good. No, I'm glad you're feeling better. No, that's fine. What happened was I had worked today, pay more, but I just couldn't. I didn't get this job until last night. So sometimes with my job, I may be called to a job the day before, you know. So I was like, oh, darn. I tried not working, but it didn't happen. We have 630 on the phone. We're going to bring him in.
Perfect. I think I know who that is.
630. Oh, okay.
Hello?
630, you're on the line. Yes?
Hello. You guys hear me?
Yes,
yeah.
You can.
Okay. Hey, what's up? It's Brian. How you guys doing tonight?
Hi, Brian. How's everything?
Hold on one second. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm having a hard time hearing you guys. You guys hear me?
Oh, that's okay. Take your time. We can hear you.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, you're covered up loud and clear.
Okay, maybe it's my phone. So what's going on, guys? I was going to call in earlier, but I was eating some food. You know, I feel bad that you were talking for about an hour and... You know, nobody else could talk to, but I was listening. So I was listening in. You're doing a great job. You're doing a great job. It kind of sucks when it seems like you're talking to yourself and nobody else. You know, nobody's talking back. And but you're doing a great job.
Aw, thanks, Brian. Yeah, you know what it is? I worked today. Like I was saying, I don't know if you heard. So I didn't get a chance to prepare. I didn't get a chance to do an ad promo, nothing like that. So. Yeah, but I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
No,
so funny.
No problem. Well, you know, you brought up some really good questions. And, you know, one of the things that I find very interesting about the whole terrorist, you know, whatever, Libyan, it doesn't even really matter what country, you want to talk about because there's so many. You know, the few things that strike me funny is, you know, obviously the notion of blowback. I mean, Ron Paul brought it up many times. And even going back to the Founding Fathers, and I don't remember exactly who said this, but, you know, you need to be wary of entangling alliances, that we should trade with everybody, but we shouldn't ally with anybody. And that's rooted in, you know, that's rooted in our you know, in our Founding Fathers and what we found this country on. So... You know, we are probably our own worst enemy, and I know that doesn't win me a lot of fans, but that's the truth. I mean, we are probably our own worst enemy, and when you stop and think about, you know, where are these people getting the money? Because these are very poor. Most of these are very poor countries we're talking about.
Right.
You know, they don't have a lot of resources. So where are these guys getting the money to do what they're doing? And for what purpose? And if you think about it, this is just my opinion, but when you
CIA,
think about it, effectively,
huh? MI6, Mossad.
Right. Well, yeah. When you think about it, if you want to just continue this large military budget and continue this military-industrial complex going, you need to have an enemy. And if you don't have an enemy, you better damn well make one. So, it sounds conspiracy-ist, conspiracy theorist kind of like that, but, it just all roads lead to that, I think, to that conclusion, at least in my opinion. What do you guys think?
I agree. I agree 110%. I mean, if you don't have a boogeyman, why are you going to have an entity to fight the boogeyman, and how can you substantiate it and validate
it? Right. Yeah.
I mean, the U.S. still hasn't learned yet. I mean, we keep training these freedom. They want to call them freedom fighters, and then later on they want to call them, terrorist organizations that we have to fight and wipe off the map. You know what I mean? But we keep training these individuals. But again, like Austin said, CIA, Mossad, they're all involved in training these individuals to topple the governments that we want to topple. But like you said, blowback. Then that's when we have blowback, and that's when we have to now, the American people have to suffer, and the people around the world have to suffer when you have these organizations that we train and we support, we fund, we give them weaponry, and then they want to fight us now with the same funding and weaponry that we gave them. It just doesn't make any sense. They still have not learned. But again, that's their strategy. It's part of their chess game. Al Qaeda is part of their chess game.
Like one big circle jerk. No offense, but it sounds like a big circle.
No.
You know,
it is.
Well,
you're right.
It's true, but we've got to play the no morons warning because it is the second hour.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes. If you are a moron or a member of the PTL club, please turn off your radio because we don't need any more stupid, narrow-minded, pencil-neck geeks who wouldn't know the First Amendment if it came up and bit them on the butt. Thank you.
You went full retard, man. Never go full retard.
Well, that's basically what our little letterbox agencies, not just ours, I mean, Mossad, and we got MI6, England's involved. All these little letterbox agencies and the status don't like hearing it, but we created Al-Qaeda from the Mujahideen. We sent them to Afghanistan to fight the Russians, who were our enemies back in the 80s. Back in the 70s, Hamas, as it's known now, the terrorist group, was basically reinforced and propped up and basically create left Phoenix from the ashes, brought back to be a counterinsurgency a little against the PLO. Palestine Liberation Organization and Yasser Arafat back in the 70s. I mean, these things are created by our wonderful, wonderful letterbox agencies, our intelligence agencies, showing all this intelligence, creating these monsters. And then when the monsters, bite the hand that feeds them, so to speak, They shrug their shoulders and like, oh, we gotta take care of it. We gotta bomb these people.
Right.
What the hell do you think you're gonna get when you get a bunch of radical Mujahideen, and you arm them and train them and give them money? What the hell do you think's gonna happen?
Right.
Yeah.
It, it would be silly to think that we shouldn't expect some kind of blowback. And the sad part in all this is it's never the people that should be the intended, you know, recipient of the consequences. It's always the innocent, you know. That brings up another point is when you look at it, when you look at these terrorists, so to speak, and, you know, I come from Irish heritage, so I've heard that terrorist term many years being put on Irish people because, of course, they try to defend themselves against British. But, you know, when you think about it, when they attack targets, they're attacking civilian targets. Now, I understand that's to instill fear, but they never really go after the real perpetrators. And, you know, that kind of makes me believe that it's kind of a setup. That you know, like I said, it just kind of leads me to that conclusion that it's a setup. They're hitting targets that we want them to hit or that we need them to hit to continue going on with this war that just keeps perpetuating itself because it'll never end because we have no real targets.
Of course we don't.
Yeah. Right. You just blanket label somebody a terrorist. And like I said, I grew up in a family, a lot of my family members are either IRA members or former IRA members, which was labeled for a long time a terrorist organization. Well, when you got people trying to kill you, you're going to fight back. You know, and I don't think a lot of Americans quite understand that. You know, when we're bombing these countries, and again, this is probably not going to win me many friends, when we're bombing these countries, what do you think the response is going to be? That they're just going to say, oh, you know, no problem, we'll forgive and forget. No, you piss a lot of people off, and they're going to try and do something to hurt you. You know, when mothers and fathers see their kids executed in front of them or entire families are destroyed, what do you think the intended consequences are going to be? You know, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't know how you can follow this what I can only term as a lack of logic and expect, or madness, whatever you want to call it, and expect anything less.
Right.
Right.
I mean, again, I mean, you've got almost 2 million people crammed into a 10 by 25 mile area that's fenced off. And it's an open air prison, and you know, and I see all these people. Well, you know, Hamas is doing this, and Hamas is doing that, and they're not out to hurt the Palestinian people. They're just out to, you know, get Hamas. And meantime, look at all these civilian casualties. They go decimate whole neighborhoods. So you mean to tell me that Hamas is in these 300 houses in this neighborhood? They're in every single one of these houses that you just leveled.
Right, and you know, I was watching a video with I don't know if you guys know who Max Egan and Ken O'Keefe are, but
yes.
I was watching a video quite a while back ago, and they were filming while they're in Gaza a few years back. And they showed Hamas, and Hamas is really about 300 soldiers, very hardly equipped with anything. And we already know about the bottle rockets that they shoot across to Israel that do no damage. They can't even blow up a road. But they have hardly any weapons. It's not even a military. It's a group of about 300 or 400 people, you know, and they. You know, I'm not defending Hamas. I'm sure they do some plenty, you know, bad stuff themselves. But it's ridiculous. How do you even call it an Israeli defense force when you're attacking another country? How do you call
right.
it a defense force?
Right.
That
defies touch.
Exactly.
You know?
Crazy.
I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me. And
well,
what makes less sense
to
is how people...
Oh no, I'm sorry. They do that to get that. You know, they say it's in defense of when they're bombing, but that's because it's you know, because it's been portrayed throughout decades since Israel became a state that, you know, poor Israel is surrounded by Muslim nations and they have to constantly defend themselves. So it's embedded in Western civilization that Israel, I'm not talking about the Israeli people, I'm talking about the Israeli government, they're the innocent in all this. When for decades since Israel became a state, they've been committing genocide of the Palestinian people. They have invaded Palestine, took out their businesses, took out their homes, put up all these, like Austin was saying, I mean, Gaza. How many miles is Gaza? I mean, seriously, where are these people going to go?
Right.
I mean, I just don't get it. Where are they going to go? I mean, it's, you know, and even with, you know, there's a permanent ceasefire now, supposedly for now, indefinite ceasefire, but even before that, during the invasion, you know, during the murder of the Palestinian people, that's what I call it what it is, during this last war that they were having, was basically the murder of these individuals. People want to say, oh, well, Hamas was, you know, shooting rockets from schools and from people's homes and from hospitals, when the UN workers that were there were interviewed and said there were no rockets being maintained at these facilities. We're here. That's not where they're fighting from. So the thing is, it's like, who do you believe? You know, do you believe the people that are actually there helping these people? Or do you want to believe what Israel's saying? You know, Israel says they have this, you know, the Iron Dome that has stopped these missiles. Okay, this is what they're saying. And the Iron Dome had the capability of stopping 99% of these missiles. But if you know about Hamas missiles, they weren't great missiles as it was. You might as well shoot a potato out of a pipe because it was nothing,
right.
You know, it was nothing like Israel's arms. Nothing. Doesn't even meet what Israel has. And
right.
Israel, the war, the bombing of Israel killed Palestinians in a disproportionate amount. And that was the problem. Even in the UK, the parliament had hearings on this and wanted to charge Israel with war crimes. Because of the disproportionate amount of people dying due to the Israeli rocket fires. And what I didn't get is that Israel said, okay, but we do give them warning that we're going to be bombing, but you give them warning with a smaller bomb. You're setting a bomb to let you know, listen, we're going to send you a bigger bomb in 5 minutes. And you need to evacuate. Where are they going to go?
Right.
That's
right.
Like it's like Manhattan Island. I mean, I hate to even use Manhattan as an analogy, but think about it. You go to do something to Manhattan Island, where are people going to go except the water? It's the same thing in a way. I mean, you're talking about an island surrounded by borders and then water. That's all you have, you know? So
right.
You get an area. Yeah, where are they going to go?
It's the same situation that, like I said, I come from Irish heritage. It's the same situation that's been going on for thousands of years in Ireland. Where are these people going to go? When you start attacking these people, where are they going to go? You know?
They have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to go. And that's the issue.
I think that's in part why a lot of people that I talk to, especially in Ireland, they have a lot of sympathy for the people in Gaza, and they show a lot of support for the people in Gaza because they face the same thing, you know, for a long time. Now, granted, it's a lot better now, and, you know, they've reached relative peace, but think about this, you know, and it's not, you know, obviously it's not the poor Irish and all this stuff, but what other democracy do you know that has another country inhabiting it, Northern Ireland?
Right.
I mean, the British are inhabiting another democracy, another country, or republic, or whatever you want to call it. But they basically annexed, which is a fancy word of stealing land, they basically annexed Northern Ireland and took it over for themselves.
Yep.
That's not
exactly.
That's not okay. That's not okay. But
it's not.
You know, it's and we see this situation playing out over and over and over again throughout history. When are we going to start learning our lesson? You know, at what point are we going to start valuing all life, you know, instead of just certain groups? The Israelis are brainwashed, and to be honest with you, to a certain extent, Americans, with this idea that we are somehow better
or we are somehow privileged and because
right.
we were born on a certain piece of dirt. That's not
right.
okay. It's not okay. Because all
no,
life
it's
is
not
valuable.
Okay.
Right.
It's
all life is valuable. That's the thing.
It always goes back to this entity that no one can ever, you know, give me a working definition of, but it's always goes back to government.
Yep.
Government.
Yep.
Government.
Well, I'll give you a working definition for government. I'll give you that. Here's a working definition for government. Government is nothing more than people, costumes, title, and belief. Plain and simple. That's what a government is. Actually, when you want to think about it like that, there is no such thing as government. It's just a made-up term to give somebody authority that they wouldn't otherwise have if they were just an individual.
Right.
Right.
That's it.
So, if I were to say to you, I want to take over your property, I'm going to put it to better use than you. That's wrong.
Right.
If I come with a group of people, say, we're going to take over your property, make it, you know, put it to better use than you are, it's still wrong. But all of a
yep.
sudden, if you vote for somebody and put them in government, they have this magical power that they can take over and do the dirty work and take over your property because people democratically elected this government.
Right. Yeah, it's utter insanity. I don't understand how statists can continue to prop up this insanity and sleep at night. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you get into the mind of the statist. I mean, this is it in a nutshell. And you say, well, why do you need an authority figure to tell you what to do? Oh, it's not for me. It's for the other guy.
Right.
But they don't realize that they're the other guy.
Yep.
Right. Exactly.
right. No, I don't need that. I'm capable of making my own decisions, but it's the other guy.
Right.
And the other guy's saying the same thing about you.
Right. And it's not to say that there aren't bad actors, you know, in every culture and every rung of society. But I can tell you this, if we stop electing these people and stop putting these people in positions of authority or power, it'd be very easy to pick those people out and segregate them from society and put them in a mental institution. I don't know if you can rehabilitate people that are psychopaths or sociopaths. I don't know if that's possible, but we might as well try, and it'll be a hell of a lot easier if we stop voting for them. Plain and simple. Because you look at a lot of these elected officials, man, at the very least, they're sociopaths. Not all of them, of course, but a vast majority of them. And
right.
a good portion of them are psychopaths. They have no empathy. They have no caring. They don't care about anybody but themselves.
It's true. I mean, think about it. They're on recess. They're supposed to come back on Monday. Then I have another recess for 2 weeks. I just don't get it. We have ISIS.
Well,
I'm
happy for that.
Well,
you know, I wish
come back
they would
and
just stop coming back. Right.
right.
I wish they would just stop coming back and go on a permanent recess. You know, when Lincoln was president, there was a concern that the Congress was going to take their money and never come back. I think they were onto something then. Just don't come back. Stay away. It would be a hell of a lot better.
Stay away. You know what? They might as well not, because you still have a president that works without Congress's, you know, congressional approval. So why bother coming back?
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know, we have a king now. We don't have a president. We have a king. We have a dictator. That's what this is. You know, I love the people. I love the people, the liberals on my Facebook that say, you know, Obama is just, he's done so much. Yeah, first of all, he has not done a damn thing but put this country more in debt.
Nothing good, anyway.
He's pissing off Russia, I don't think any president pissed off Russia as much as this president. There's no other president that pushed Russia and China to open up their own BRICS bank. But yeah, he's doing a good job.
Right. Well, you know, I hear it all the time, people complaining about him playing golf. Stay out there. Go play golf. Don't come back. Just stay out there and stay the fuck away. At the very least, if we got these people out of our way and off our backs, I can't, you know, when they had the what was it called, when they laid off all the I forget what it was called, but when government basically shut down for those people, well, what happened? What changed? Nothing. Everything went on just as normal. Everybody was getting along fine. No wars were started. Nobody was killed during that process. Hey, I think we stumbled on a good idea. Just stop showing up and stop, you know, stop coming into Congress and going into the presidency and just stay home. Go golfing.
Just don't show up to work. You know what? Give the power back to the people. Give the power back to the people.
Right.
I bet you if this country is run by the people, for the people, because our Congress, with the exception of a couple of representatives that I do like, the very selective few, like maybe two of them, out of all of them, you know, I think that we wouldn't have any wars. There would be no war. There would be no reason. We have our own resources, our own natural resources that we can use. We don't need other countries, and that's the problem. And with the problem with governments is that they colonialize other countries for resources. That's the only reason why we're getting involved in the Middle East. Do you really think that our government and Congress, do you think they really care about democracy in the Middle East? The hell do we care about democracy in the Middle East?
Right.
They don't want a democracy, whatever. Well, then leave them alone. They're thousands of miles away. We don't really care about democracy because every time this country wants to instill a democracy, and I say that in quotes, and I'm putting up my fingers and doing the quote sign democracy at the moment. But the thing is, every time we do that, we take out a government leader in other countries for it to only be taken over by militants. So we should just leave those leaders in there, let them alone, and then deal with what's going on in America. I was listening, I listen to lamestream media, of course, just to get some information on their side of the story. But I was there was one, I don't know who his name is, but there was a commentator yesterday. The Department of Labor came out with their so-called unemployment numbers. And they always lie. They're always trying to say, well, 140,000 jobs were created in the month of August. But what they're not covering is that they're mostly part-time jobs, which causes what? If you're used to full-time work, but now you only have part-time work, it's called underemployment. I want to know why underemployment is not factored in their numbers. Because if it is, they know the people will understand something's not right. Our economy is not growing. And I'm going to tell you this. This Obamacare has cost jobs. This Obamacare, I'm telling you. We have a government right now. I understand that. But in order for us to have a working government, because, it's hard to get the American people away to be, from the statism, state of mind, okay? So people don't want, that's the issue. You know what I mean? So that's why people, the American people, want their government to take over. The American people want their government to protect them and to make these laws and to represent the people when the people really should be representing themselves, because Congress and the Senate are certainly not doing that. But it's hard to get people away from that statist mind. We can discuss it with them, but it's hard for them it's going to be hard for our country to make that transition. So with that said, for the time being, we need a more conservative, in my opinion, a more conservative government, president and Senate, and also a more conservative leadership than we do now, because maybe they'll repeal that Obamacare. Because let me tell you something. The only people that are benefiting from Obamacare are the people collecting welfare, and it's only the only other people that are betting it, benefiting from it are still the insurance companies and all these new health care organizations that were created after Obamacare. I think that was the only jobs that were created. It is because of this new Obamacare law, which is, what, 3,000 pages?
Yeah,
so that
right.
was the only jobs it created. But it, people, I'm going to tell you right now, I have two part-time jobs because my full-time job, we weren't getting work from our customer. And we have a huge customer. So they weren't giving us work because there's this whole big competition thing. So that we weren't getting work in February to March. So I was basically out of work from the end of February until about 2 months ago, and I'm still trying to catch up financially. But the thing is, I had to leave that position because I didn't know what was happening with that. I could only find, because they weren't getting a lot of work, and I couldn't live on that. So I had to find something. So the thing is, yeah, I found jobs, but they're two part-time jobs. And that's the problem right now, because if you're a company that employs 50 or more people, you have to provide health insurance for those who are full-time. So they'd rather hire part-time employees, pay a lesser salary, and they don't have to provide health care because of this new Obamacare law. The problem is also, and they don't get penalized for not providing health care. If they have 50 or more employees, they don't get penalized if they're part-time employees. Full-time employees are supposed to get health care, so that's the new law. So now these companies are not hiring full-time, they're only part-time. So now people are underemployed, people are still losing their homes, people are still filing bankruptcy. So I want to know, how the hell is this economy doing better? And there was a commentator yesterday when I was listening to this, and he spoke up. He said, what jobs were created? People are still not spending. Nobody's spending. I want to know how this Christmas is going to happen, because people aren't spending. The retail sales are down. Investments for the average person are down because they just can't afford it. What you have to do is to stimulate the economy, and it's not just about creating jobs. Get rid of this Obamacare, or get rid of the laws in Obamacare about the 50 employees or more. Stop with the IRS penalties, because the IRS shouldn't be involved in health care in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
And why don't you lower our taxes? Lower income tax. You know what? Repeal income tax. The 16th Amendment, it's illegal anyway. It wasn't ratified by all the states. If you got rid of it, if you got rid of it,
ran on, Val.
That,
First of all, government does not create jobs.
Right.
That's what
it
I was going to. Yep, exactly.
It does not stimulate the economy. The private sector does that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
All the government does is screw it up, and they.
Yep.
But Val, don't you know that unemployment is way down because instead of having a full-time job, you create two part-time jobs?
But that's what I'm saying. Unemployment's down. Yeah, I get it. But underemployment is up. And what
Not to mention the fact that all the people that have just dropped out of unemployment that are no longer accounted. You know, they don't count those people anymore. So if you run out of unemployment benefits, and they don't have any jobs, you're just not counted. They're just people, I guess, I don't know what they're doing. They're probably living on the street.
They're in limbo.
Right.
But no, Austin's right. Government doesn't create jobs. We have a government, what they need to do is repeal the income tax, which they'll never do because it's just too much money they will lose. But at least what they need to do is cut individuals and these private businesses. I'm not talking about corporations. I'm talking about the small businesses and individuals.
Right.
You cut that tax, they'll spend it. Let me tell you something. About $1,000 a month comes out of my pay for taxes. Really? So I work and slave for $1,000 to be taken out of my pay. That $1,000 could be used to stimulate the economy. So this
Not
tax, these taxes, you know what I mean? So this is what I don't get. But again, because government does not create jobs. Government is all about taking what you have and dispersing it among the others that, you know, that can work. They just don't want to. So it's like
government,
I'm working.
Government creates nothing. Anything
nothing.
That the government gives you as an entitlement, it
right.
stole from someone else.
Exactly.
Right? To take from the productive to give to the less productive.
That's,
you know,
the way
it works. Right, and you know,
you have to get rid of that.
I'm all charity, and I try to do my part when it comes to charity. And if people had more money, there would be more charity given. So if
exactly.
just by reducing the income tax, I obviously I think it should be gone altogether. And if you've ever read
illegal.
The Grace Commission from Reagan era, every single nickel, or every single dollar that goes into the income tax, not one nickel comes out to any service that Americans expect from that. That goes directly to pay off the interest,
so that,
not the principal, the
yeah,
interest on the Federal
right.
Reserve debt, which is illegal.
Right. Get rid of the Federal Reserve. We have to get rid of the Federal Reserve. That's what we need to do, is end the Fed. End the Fed. We don't need a private banking corporation
right.
involved in the U.S. economy. We get rid of these taxes or cut them a substantial amount. People will spend more. It's a known fact. People will spend more, and it will stimulate the economy. And when you stimulate the economy, people spend more. That's what creates jobs, the spending. So the thing
right.
is, but the government's involved, and they're just looking to take from the American people constantly. Those jobs are going to create. This is how they get you in a campaign, not you, me, and Austin, but the American
right.
people. Oh, we're going to create jobs. We're going to stimulate the economy. What did you stimulate? You're not doing anything. This is
right.
the U.S. government. It's government. It shouldn't be involved in the private sector businesses. That's why it's called the private sector.
Right.
But they're involved because Obamacare has now limited the private sector in hiring people. So I just
right.
don't understand how they can't see this. They do. Unfortunately, the American people don't. And more of the American people, the populace has and the masses have to stand up and say no more. But we need to do it collectively. One person can't do it. We have to get everyone on board to oppose all this. And the only way we get people on board to oppose all this is expose this. Most people don't know that the 16th Amendment is illegal and they needed a certain amount of states to ratify it. And they did it overnight behind our backs. And not every state that ratified it, but they passed the 16th Amendment. So basically, income tax is illegal. The Federal Reserve is illegal. The IRS is illegal. I have 917. I'm going to bring 917 in. Okay, 917, you're on the line.
Am I 917?
Yes.
Yeah, hi. I'm trying to find out if you think that Al-Qaeda is going to try and outshine ISIS in the next few weeks in New York.
Outshine them? That's
I think
that
it's a dick-measuring contest between ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Your thoughts?
Oh.
Yeah.
Aren't they the same thing?
Well, they're funded probably. They're funded from the same source.
Well, the profane leader is the profane leader of ISIS is trying to show that he's more powerful than the Al Qaeda leader.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, my God,
that's
yeah.
Funny.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to read you something. Hold on, I'm going to get this right now.
Let me bring Lisa in. This got her hand up.
Well, it's just always fun to hear you guys laughing. So,
hey.
If I still have the floor, I would like to add to that.
Well, I want to read something. I don't know if anybody knows about the global research. I think global research is excellent. So if you ever want to go get some information, they do so much research. International research, it's amazing. Just I'm a fan of global research. So if you ever want to look at their information, you go to globalresearch.ca, okay? So I'm going to read an article or part of an article from global research. Okay, it's pretty big. ISIL, and it's funny that, I don't know, do we want to call them ISIS, IS, ISIL? They keep changing names, and that is purpose. That is purposely to confuse the American people. They do that on purpose, number one. Okay, so the title of this is ISIL Leader Closely Cooperating with CIA. A Russian expert in Oriental Studies, Vyacheslav Matsulov, I don't know how the hell I did that, but that's his name, said that the leader of Islamic State of Iraq and Levant, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, has close ties and cooperation with the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency. All facts show that al-Baghdadi is in contact with the CIA, and during all the years that he was in prison, 2009, he has been collaborating with CIA, Massive Told Voice of Russia Radio on Tuesday. He noted, and this is the Russian expert, noted that U.S. does not need to use drones against ISIL because it can easily have access to the ISIL leaders, adding that since the terrorist commanders are the U.S. allies, Washington would never want to combat them as they are staging the U.S. plans. Think about that. And now think about President Obama, since this whole ISIS thing, yeah, they're sending planes over, they're sending some bombs, but he has no strategy. Still doesn't have a strategy. Why? My question is why he doesn't have such a strategy, okay? So, again, keep that in mind when I read this article. ISIL is a Takfiri extremist group which has its roots in the insurgency against U.N.-led invasion in Iraq in 2006 and was later developed in Syria in 2012, a.k.a. the Syrian rebels, a.k.a. ISIS. Okay. Let's go back to when we started arming the Syrian rebels to overthrow the Assad regime. The Syrian rebels were being helped by al-Qaeda operatives, okay? And the thing is, so in one country, we're fighting al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, but then we're supporting the Syrian rebels, and it's proof that because there is a photo shoot that President McCain had with the freedom fighters. Again, remember, we call them freedom fighters in this administration that we have. So Basically what we did was we armed the Syrian rebels who were being helped by some al-Qaeda members. So basically we were fighting al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. Then we're also helping al-Qaeda in another little civil war with the Syrian rebels. The Syrian rebels broke off. There were members from the Syrian rebels that we armed that broke off and became ISIS. And if you remember, you never heard of ISIS, right? This year was the only time you heard of ISIS. Am I correct? We didn't know about ISIS before 3 or 4 months ago. You know, and then they want to say that ISIS was around since 2007, 2008. Really? When? I never heard of ISIS. I mean, at least with al-Qaeda, we knew who Bin Laden.
Miss Valerie Ann?
Yes.
Let me interject here. This is Robin New York. Do you think it's a coincidence that the Islamic State might be working in cahoots with Putin just as al-Qaeda was being funded by the Russians back in the 80s?
No, because Russia, I don't believe so, because Russia doesn't need an Islamic terrorist group to do if they wanted to do something. Putin doesn't have to use an organization to do what he wants to do. Putin doesn't hide behind a terrorist organization, I don't believe, in order to get what he wants. Do you know what I mean? So, no, I do not believe that.
Okay, thank
Unless somebody else has a different – yeah, I don't believe that. But, again, I'm from my research, I don't get that. But I'm not an expert. I don't have contacts in international relations. But from my research and in my opinion, I do not believe Putin is behind any of this at all. Putin, you know,
right?
Has his own
and they're fighting
on.
They're fighting those same terrorists in Chechnya. So it wouldn't make sense for Putin to fund them when they're fighting them in Chechnya.
Right.
You know what I mean? That wouldn't to me. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know, but. It doesn't make sense to me. If you follow a logical it wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't. It's a good question, Rob. It's a very good question, absolutely.
Yeah,
but
it is.
I personally don't feel that, no. You know, the problem is, Rob, you're welcome. The problem is we never learned from fighting, from supporting, you know, we supported Bin Laden that was also deemed a freedom fighter, by the way, in the 1980s against Russia. Freedom fighter against Russia, okay, during the Afghan-Russian war. We armed them, we trained them.
He was a CIA asset.
Right.
Exactly.
Along those
look
lines,
it up. His name was Tim Austin.
Now that you mentioned that, along those lines. Can you guys hear
right.
me? Now that you mentioned
yeah,
that, along those lines, do you think that because we left our weapons and tanks behind, it's any coincidence, do you think it was an accident by Obama?
Good question. I covered this. How many times have we discussed this, Austin? Let me tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was definitely left behind. You know what? The mainstream media basically stated that the Iraqi army left them, just basically abandoned them. That's not what happened. Think about the chronology of events. We armed the Syrian rebels in Syria. Part of most of the Syrian rebels joined ISIS or created ISIS, however you want to look at it. Then they invade Iraq with our weapons. They knew where to go. They knew how to get them. The Iraqi army was still there. The army didn't leave until ISIS came and took over for U.S. weapons. Now, when this first happened, there was a little bit of a brief comment that was made during the mainstream media that the Pentagon didn't want to bring back our weapons because it was too expensive. So that makes no sense. You have millions and millions of dollars of tanks, Humvees, weaponry, but you're not going to spend some money that you to take them back. It makes no sense. We left them there for them.
No, Val, that's okay. We'll just have the Fed create some more funny money, and we'll just, you know, the military-industrial complex will just have to make some more weapons.
That's it.
Well,
they just say, yeah, the Fed will just print out money out of thin air with no collateral to back it. Yeah, why not? Fiat money.
Right, and when they say they can't afford something and you have a Federal Reserve that can print money out of thin air, how do you justify that? How do you justify it not being able to afford anything if you can just print money out of thin air?
You know, and then it's funny when we write a check and, you know, we send it to one of the banks, which is all controlled by one central bank, right? So we write a check to pay a bill. It bounces. We get a fee for it. I mean, we have to pay a $35 fee for that. But when the Fed prints out money and they have no money or any assets or collateral to back up that money, that's okay. See, that's where the difference is. They could just print money and have no backing for it. It's just pieces of paper. There's no collateral. There's no backing to it at all. They're printing out money on a daily basis and we're in a deficit of what's our deficit now?
17 trillion or something like that.
That's
a joke too. If you roll the unfunded liabilities, let's try about 180 trillion.
Right.
It is.
And that brings up another good point: is how is it that every country, almost every single country in the world, owes money? Who do they owe it to? If everybody owes money to something, how can every country in the world owe money? There's got to be a creditor and a debtor, wouldn't it be? I mean, it just makes sense. So how can everybody owe money?
That's Keynesian economics. That creates your roads, my roads. That creates things that are needed in society.
Yeah.
The ones pulling all the strings are the Asians, the Chinese. So we owe them money, trust me. Everyone owes the Chinese money.
Yeah, but Chinese also have a national debt, do they not?
Mm-hmm.
No. No.
Not like us, though.
No.
Okay.
Actually, if you look at things, China actually has a $6 trillion surplus.
Oh, okay. Okay. I wasn't sure on that.
Okay. Oh, you said debt. Well, I'm sorry. They have debt, but they control their debt. That's the thing. America does not control the debt. You don't see China going to war. Why don't you see China going to war with these Middle Eastern countries and putting their country in a deficit? Why don't you see Russia going into war with any of these countries, these Middle Eastern countries? They're not involved in any of this. Think about it. They're not involved in any of this. But I also wanted to bring up this. Now, to go back to what we were discussing about us arming, you know, the bad people, okay, let's say in lay terms.
Well, they're the bad people this week. I mean, next week they'll be the good guys again.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Yes, ISIS is a threat, I believe, but that threat was also created by the U.S. government. And I'm going to give you an example. Okay, so those five Taliban leaders, terrorist leaders that we exchanged for Bergdahl, we basically had an agreement that they would be sent to Qatar, right? So they went to Qatar. They think everything's fine. They're in Qatar. They're they're no longer a threat, which is BS. But this is what's really
great.
It's a joke. It's a joke because I'm going to read you something from Breitbart. From Breitbart, listen. July 17, 2010, there was an article at Breitbart that said this. This week, that was in July 17, 2014, the United States signed a massive armaments agreement with the government of Qatar to sell Apache helicopters, advanced Patriot service to air missile, SAMs, and Javelin handheld ground-to-air defense missiles. The arms deal was signed at the Pentagon in Virginia by U.S. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel and the Qatar equivalent Hamadid bin Ali al-Atta. A Pentagon spokesman said the major arms deal, today's signing ceremony, underscores the strong partnership between the U.S. and Qatar. So now we have a partnership with Qatar, who basically made the deal to let the five Taliban terrorists live there. Why are we negotiating with these individuals and these countries? Why is it? Think about it. So basically we go in, we colonialize them, take out their leaders, let a huge terrorist organization get our weaponry, let five terrorists out. This president lets five terrorists out without the approval of Congress, totally violating the Constitution. And now these terrorists are in Qatar, but now we sign an arms agreement with Qatar. Why don't we just give them weapons to use against us? It's a deal with the Muslim Brotherhood, friendly Qatar. You've got to be kidding me. And these are people that are leaders in our national security. It makes no sense at all.
Well, we don't negotiate with terrorists. We fund them.
Yeah, but there's no negotiating. We just freaking give them money. Why don't they?
Right.
They're on direct deposit. They're on direct deposit. We just give them
right.
money to go into a bank and take out money. It's freaking. You might as well do that because that's what we're doing. And then all of a sudden, when ISIS came over, the first thing they hit was the bank in Iraq, the central bank in Iraq. That's the first thing they hit.
Ms. Valerian, can I interject because I differ with that one? I think that the first target is going to be, and I quote, when he was let go from prison, one of the key members said, "I'll see you guys in New York."
Yeah.
So I think that they take a shot at the New York economy. I think that they're going to take a shot at the Federal Reserve, and they are going to take a shot at the New York Stock Exchange. Your thoughts?
Well, what's one way to bring down the U.S. economy? What's one way to bring down the United States economy and to get the people so scared that they want to be surveilled and they want a police state? What's one way to get a police state? Create fear. Create fear and just deplete our U.S. economy where we go into worse than what the Depression is.
You destroy the ability to make the funny money you referred to earlier in your show, then we're really screwed.
Yeah. Well, funny money.
I don't know. You think about it. I mean, not that I'm going to say that it's a good thing, but let me ask you this. Are the banksters going to be in the Federal Reserve when this happens? Because I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is that the Federal Reserve is not really federal. It's run by the people.
Right.
Exactly. Well, let me say this. Do you know in 1913 when the 16th Amendment was illegally ratified? Well, it was passed because it was illegally. They saying it was ratified, but it wasn't ratified by all the states that were required. There's a certain number of states that need to ratify that, and not all states were available. Didn't all ratify it, but they passed the 16th Amendment implementing the income tax. And do you know that was in 1913? Also 1913, the Federal Reserve was created. So I don't know if a lot of people know that. I know we do.
Oh, yeah.
But isn't that a little bit of a coincidence? They enact a central private bank to control the United States economy, and they have control of interest rates. Crazy.
Even though they declare themselves as federal, it's not really a federal agency. It's an organization run and created by the people.
It's not created by the people. It's created by the New World Order government. The people never agreed the people never agreed for an income tax to be implemented, and the people never agreed on the Federal Reserve. Our state senators and our Congress people are not for the people. They're for themselves, and they're just for government. They're not for the American people. Because if they were for the American people, they wouldn't be on recess the entire summer when we have crisis going on, and they wouldn't be going on vacation again.
Wait
in
a second,
weeks.
Val. Val, yeah. They represent us.
Let me say this. If any of these people represent you, then you might be a sociopath or a psychopath. If you believe these people represent you, you're nuts.
I will say again. No, it's true. But people may disagree with me, but there are two congressmen that I do like. Two out of all of them. Trey Gowdy and Louis Gohmert. Those are the only two that I like. I don't like any. And our New York State representatives are nothing but a bunch of socialist, communist individuals that are in and representing New York State. And they need to be out. They're disgusting.
I like Justin Amash.
We only have about 3 minutes left. Just so everybody knows, we have 3 minutes left.
So you don't like Rand Paul? He's a libertarian repuke again.
I don't know about him. I like his dad. So, but I don't know about Rand Paul. I think he's another one that can sell out. He's nothing like his father. Nothing like his father.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
There's always a few. They gotta give the appearance of legitimacy. So there's going to be a couple guys here and there or a couple of gals that are decent. You know, I even liked, what was his name, Kucinich. Because not everything, obviously, but he was against the Federal Reserve. And pretty much that was my litmus test, because if you were against the Federal Reserve, you at least had hope. I at least had hope for you.
Right.
So, you know, like Ron Paul, Kucinich, and a few others, but the vast majority of them, they're sociopaths or psychopaths or somewhere in between there.
Yeah.
Plain and simple.
I just want to let you guys know we have about 60 seconds left, but also we can go into overtime, right?
Okay, can I throw one quick scenario? Maybe we'll carry it into the next show. Is do you think that the financial leaders, the missing money from MF Global, and the chairman of some of the regulators were in cahoots to fund the war?
Yeah, they're all – think about it. Wars are – when you have war, money is created. Wealth is created by war. We spend the money, but the wealth is created, but it's not the wealth that's created for the country. The wealth is created for those elites that run everything.
If you compare they used to work for – Goldman Sachs together, the head of one of the top financial regulators and the person responsible for the missing money from MF Global, Corzine. If you think about Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett.
Well, hold on one second, Rob. Hold that thought. We have 10 seconds left. Everybody, we're going to go into overtime. You can find the entire segment at Blog Talk Radio, Truth Emerges. Have a good night, everyone. See you there. Okay, Rob, what were you saying?
I was saying that the missing money from MF Global, if you look at some of the leaders, people responsible, Corzine, they still haven't found the money, and the person who was the chairman of one of the head financial regulators in charge to prevent that, they used to be in cahoots together and pals from Goldman Sachs. So you think about Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid, very similar.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of them. It's a revolving door between governments, corporations, and banks. You know, they all look at Hank Paulson. He worked for Goldman Sachs and then became the Treasury Secretary. It's one hand washing the other.
You guys talk among yourselves for a minute. I gotta make a call quick, and I'll be right back. You guys talk among yourselves.
The two CEOs of Goldman Sachs went in two different directions, like Billy the Kid and Pat Garrett, and it was by design. The head of the top financial regulator, I won't mention the name, and MF Global's leader, Corzine, $6 billion missing. Way to go.
Oh yeah. There's quite a bit of shady dealings going on behind the scenes that most people don't know about, and the only reason people know about it is because somebody got caught. You know, so it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know for sure, obviously, but.
Well, he got caught, but he was never found guilty yet. It's still ongoing, and the person who was running the investigation left that federal agency.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't hear about that, but look at Corzine. He's a big donor to the Obama administration. Well, if
Corzine
somebody's
never found guilty yet. He's still open.
What's that?
Yeah,
Corzine
has
not
that.
Been found guilty yet, and
right.
The person leading the investigation has reclused himself, and eventually he left the agency.
And he probably won't be found guilty, and even if he is, he'll get a slap on the wrist. You have to pay a small fine, and it'll get buried on page 87 of some newspaper.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
We essentially have no justice system.
Guys, I have to run, but this has been a great radio show. Thanks very much.
Oh, you're
one.
Welcome, Rob. All right, hon, thanks.
Bye, guys. Good night.
Good night. Yeah, I'm going to have to end this now. I may cut off soon. I'm not sure. But, Brian, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Anytime, Belle. Good talking to you.
All right, hon. We're on again next week, so you can call in 9 to 11, the same thing, next Saturday.
Okay, sounds good. I'll talk to you later.
All right, hon. Bye.
Bye.